You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to the Dressage Today podcast, sponsored by Equestrian Plus. Today, Aviva and I get to interview Jenny and Sarah from the Dressage Foundation. We fill in all the questions you might have about what is the Dressage Foundation, what's their purpose, and what can they do for you as a dressage rider. The Dressage Foundation, for those of you who've never heard of it, is a 501c3 nonprofit tax-exempt organization whose basic mission is to cultivate and provide financial support for the advancement of dressage in the United States. And we learned some pretty cool things about it and how they help riders at all different levels. So take a listen.
It's a pretty cool organization, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you may not think that it's relevant to you, but you might be surprised. So listen.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Aviva, what's going on with you lately? What are you thankful for since this is our month of thankfulness?
This is moving into Thanksgiving. So what am I thankful for? So I'm thankful that my horse is a unicorn. he really is just the most wonderful horse in the whole world. And I'm so grateful that I have him. As horses get older, we have to do some maintenance to help them. And Tiger has not had an easy life. He's worked hard. So, a few weeks ago, my farrier mentioned that maybe it was time for him to have his stifles injected. And I've had his hocks injected in the past, and I've had one of his knees injected as well. So I called my vet, and she came out and took a look, and she said, I don't see anything awful, but it probably isn't a bad idea. So we went ahead, and we injected his stifles, and Stephanie, can I tell you that my horse dropped 10 years of life? He feels amazing. He is springing off the ground. He is covering ground. He is the fancy pants dressage horse that he was when he was younger. So I am
standing.
I am grateful to my farrier. I am grateful to my vet. I am grateful to modern medicine. I'm just really, really happy to have such a wonderful horse in my barn and to be able to keep riding him despite the fact that we're both old. You know, it's truly a gift. Yeah, well, I feel old, trust me.
We have now heard about people older than you through the Foundation.
I know. But that's my biggest thing to be grateful for right now in the horse world. How about you?
I am thankful every day. I'm thankful to God for all of the blessings in my life. I don't think anybody's life is a straight line of smoothness. But I am very grateful that he is with me both through the ups and the downs. At the moment, I'm in a little bit of a down because, Mr. Dante Licious isn't feeling his best. So we are, in the process of trying to figure out what that is. And it may be something as simple as a tummy issue. But I can be thankful that it was initially discovered while I was working on our one tempies and our pirouettes. I am thankful for my young horse, George, and his ridiculousness that makes me laugh every single day.
Wonderful.
And I'm, of course, thankful for cows. It is baby cow season here right now.
Okay.
And, my husband has done a marvelous job with his breeding program. And I would say easily 75% of the babies are on the ground all at the same time. So on a cool evening when we go driving around, it's like colored popcorn jumping up and down. They do the most ridiculous things. I was looking out the back of the barn the other day and I saw a little black one and he was just spinning in circles, spinning, 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 spinning. And then he stopped and then he fell over.
because he caught himself just so dizzy. Another little cow came running over and was like checking him out. So they are so joyful.
How do your horses handle those kind of hijinks? Do they just get used to it?
The big ones are good. Dante and Audie are both fine with it. George is a little uncertain about the cows. So when I pony him out into the cow field, he's better with the babies, actually. But the big cows, he's a little cowed by the big cows.
Bad, bad, bad fun.
But in general, I mean, you know, when they're walking in and you can see them in the cupboard, sometimes the horses are like, oh, never mind, it's a cow.
Yeah.
So
how about training horses that you get in or people who come in to take lessons? How do their horses react? I know a lot of horses have an issue with the smell of them, not just the look of them.
I have had some people, lower level riders and then some big people that came in with their horses that were like, how close are the cows going to be? And I literally have not had a horse have a problem with it as much as I've had people have a problem with it.
Interesting. You know, you've been in my indoor arena and, you know, I have all those big windows all around it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have had so many riders come in and say, has a horse ever tried to jump out a window? I'm like, no. But they worry. The horses don't. Yeah.
The things that people think about that we put into our horses' brains, like, hey, maybe I should jump out of that window.
Maybe I should be afraid of that cow. Yeah.
Mm-mm-mm. So I have lots of things to be thankful for. And and I'm thankful to be here with you. It's been over a year now.
Oh my goodness, that is something, isn't it?
Isn't that crazy?
Wow, it is crazy. We've been through a lot together.
We have.
Yay us!
Yeah,
and our listeners have been through a lot with us.
Our listeners have gone through a lot with us, and we appreciate all of them. We do.
But I need to do a little bit of an ad. Hey, listeners, we need more Ask the L questions.
Yes.
Help. Please send.
Yes. SOS. Send us.
Or maybe.
Send us stuff. SUS.
They send us stuff. Yeah. SUS. So maybe you're telling us, listeners, that you don't have any questions and we'll have to terminate that part of the podcast. So it'll go away if you don't have things to ask.
That's right. That's right.
That'll scare them.
I feel a little fearful myself. I'm like, I better get some questions together. I have a question for you for this month.
Okay.
Would you like that question?
What you got? I would like that question.
So on dressage tests, we see that some movements have a 2 coefficient. Why do some movements have the double coefficient in some tests and not in other tests? And are there any places where the double coefficient is a standard throughout all the tests?
So the double coefficient tells you that it's important, right? And why is it important? So frequently, it's important if it's the first time you see something. So for instance, the stretchy circle in training level test 2 is a double coefficient because it's important. It's new. It's different. The first time you do a lengthening, the first time you do a leg yield, you know, and as you move through the levels, there is an expectation that you master those movements and they're not important, but not a hallmark of you're ready to move up. So I think that's the reason that some movements are double coefficients sometimes and not other times. The one thing that I believe is always a double coefficient is the free walk. And the free walk is important because it's so easy to screw it up. And it shows so much about your horse. You know, I'm always, you know, For me, I think the stretchy circle should always be a double coefficient, but I don't write the tests, but that's just me. Because the stretchy circle tells on you. The stretchy circle tells whether your horse is truly following your hand, whether the horse is truly in balance, whether the horse is truly moving from behind. You know, if you throw your reins away and the horse falls on his nose and starts running, that's not a stretchy circle. You know, you can fake it in the ring, but most judges can see if you're faking it. So it tells on you. And the free walk is a lot like that as well. If your horse is relaxed and swinging, you will have a pure four-beat walk. Your horse will swing through the back. Your horse will stretch over his top line. Your horse will demonstrate overtrack. And, you know, can your horse go from concentrating and working and doing whatever it is in the test to that? The free walk tells you that. So I think that's my short answer, and I'm sticking with it. And I don't have a long answer this time.
Well, that's okay. I just looked because, of course, I just got my new book of tests. So this is interesting, and I didn't know this, and I'm wondering if it might be a typo on their part. So in training level test one, you do not see the stretchy circle.
Correct.
In training level test two, you see the stretchy circle for the first time, and it does not have a double coefficient in that
interesting
training two. But in training three through first three, you see the stretchy circle every time with the double coefficient. Isn't that odd?
That's interesting. Well, it may be because it is such a telling movement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that maybe the first time you show it, there's a certain amount of grace.
Maybe.
You know? Yeah. You know, I know many, many years ago, one of my former students got in touch with me, and she was just starting to ride the upper levels. And she said, what's the secret to the extended walk? And I said, good training. You know, it's not a trick, you know, and I think that's the thing. If you look at the dressage tests, they build. You know, we start with, you know, intro A, which doesn't even have a halt on the center line. You know, you do a transition from the trot to the walk. You know, every movement, every transition is between letter and letter. And then, you know, by intro C, they add a little tiny bit of canter, you know, and then you move to training level test one, and there's, you know, cantering on a straight line, not just on a circle. And, you know, then there's training two, where you have the stretchy circle. And, you know, training three is all about bend and suppleness. And then, you know, you get to first level, and now circles are getting a little bit smaller. And do you have the thrust to get a lengthening, you know, not a medium, but a lengthening,
right?
You know, and then, you know, first two, hello leg yield, and hello, you know, canter lengthening. Mm-hmm. But if you, you know, at the beginning of every test, up on the left hand corner, I think it is, it says, you know, new movements, you know, new expectations for the level or for the test, and it tells you what's new, and that's sort of your alert. And everything builds, you know, if you can ride, there was a wonderful thing that USEF just put out about when is it, and it's part of what they're calling, taking care of horses and, you know, I can't come up with the word that I'm trying to say, but not abuse, the opposite, horse care. And it's about when to move up. And, you know, it talks about you're getting, you know, everything is easy for you in the test, you know, the level, you know, that you're currently in, and that you're scoring consistently in, you know, the mid 60s, and that, you know, your horse isn't stressed by it. Horse welfare. That's what I was trying to come up with. My
there's
goodness.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. You get old and these words just go bye-bye. But, you know, the same thing is true with the tests, you know, it's horse welfare. You know, you don't expect an intro level horse to be able to move in, you know, the self-carriage of a Grand Prix horse. However,
sure,
you want to see a horse that is moving freely forward, a horse that understands the concept of transitions, the understanding of bend, you know, the idea of going through a corner. And as you move up the levels, you're asking for more and more things, but there are certain things that we always want to see. And that ability to relax and stretch and reach over the back is something that we always want to be able to see. So, see, it did end up being a long answer. Sorry, everyone.
That's okay. It was a very useful long answer. So,
excellent. Thank you.
Well, thank you for that. We are going to look forward to you guys sending us more pressing questions for the
Ask Me
section. And we're going to go on to our interview. But always remember, if you like what we're doing, share it with your friends, hit the like button. And before we go on, a word from our sponsor.
From short training tips to how-to videos and insider access to private clinics and lessons, learn from top dressage experts with Equestrian Plus. Watch exclusive interviews and lectures, slow motion demonstrations, and step-by-step tutorials taught by top-level pros, and explore cross-discipline topics such as groundwork, rider fitness, and stable management. Visit equestrianplus.com to sign up for a 7-day free trial with subscription.
Welcome to the Dressage Today podcast, sponsored by Equestrian Plus. Today, Aviva and I get the pleasure of interviewing Jenny Johnson and Sarah Weiss from the Dressage Foundation. Ladies, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us. We're excited to chat with you today.
Yes, yes. Let's get right down to it. Jenny, tell us about your background in horses. We'll start with you and then we'll see what Sarah has to say.
Sure. Like a lot of us, I think the first thing I ever wanted in life was a horse. And so, you know, by the time I was in fourth grade, my parents had the ability to make my dream come true. And I got my first horse in fourth grade. And then I grew up riding Western and English in 4-H mostly. And there was also a really great open show circuit that I was a part of in the Kansas City area, you know, where you go in the morning, you pay $2 a class, you're there all day, you do 10 different classes and all your friends are there. And it was just a great time. So I've grown up riding and loving horses for as long as I can remember. Right now, I don't have a horse. Several years ago, the horse that I had from when he was a weanling all through my high school and college years had to put him down because he was old. And so since then, I've just been busy with work and three children and a husband, so I'm currently not riding, but I have warned my husband that possibly when we're empty nesters, I need to get back to
the saddle. You have
wonderful.
Three children.
Yes, three kids.
That's amazing. Do any of them ride?
No, I have a son and two daughters, and my girls liked horses when they were little, and we had a pony for them at one point, but their interests took them in different directions, and we've followed their passions and not my passion. As a mom, that's what you do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Wow. Okay. Well, we hope that how soon before you're an empty nester?
Oh, gosh, it's so sad. It's only down to a couple more years. So.
Yeah. Wow.
Horses may be on the horizon again. We'll see.
Yeah. So you're not necessarily going to have an empty nest. You're just going to have a straw and hay filled nest instead.
A manure filled nest.
A manure filled nest. Yes. Miss Sarah.
And what discipline will you ride, Jenny?
You know,
if you get another horse.
Yeah. Growing up, riding mostly Western dressage is actually really interesting to me. I don't think I could ever go back to like the Western pleasure world because it's just so different than when I was growing up. But Western dressage is super interesting.
It's fascinating. I love judging it.
Yeah. They really are very, they're complex, but really pertinent all at the same time.
Yeah.
And do you judge a lot of it, Aviva?
I wouldn't say a lot, no. And okay. Since I'm not a licensed Western dressage judge, you know, I don't do any of the formal stuff. So it's okay. Just what I see at a schooling show.
We have a schooling show in the area that is actually, they're going to be a recognized WDAA show as well. And they have Natalie nice. Lamping judging it.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
I didn't realize Natalie did the Western dressage. So I was like, wow.
I didn't either.
Levels.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Sarah. How about you, Sarah? What kind of riding do you do and what's your background?
So I was lucky enough that when I was a kid, my mom was horsey. And so we grew up with a half pinot Arab. And when he passed away, we were at a barn that showed paints and pinot. And so I showed paints and pinots and I did 4-H. We did all around. I was really active in their youth organizations, which taught me so much about just being part of a group and organization. And then when I went to college, I was part of a group that founded an IHSA team, the Intercollegiate Horse Show Association.
Oh, good
team.
For you.
Yeah. And so we showed Hunt Seat and Western, and I started riding at a Hunter Jumper barn. IHSA was amazing because it was so affordable and accessible for people who didn't necessarily have a horse or could haul horses to shows. So I got to show across the Midwest where I'm from here in Nebraska. And it was an amazing experience. Then I took a good 10 years off from riding to have kids, get married, have kids, start a career. And in the last 5 years, I've started riding again. And I ride Hunter Jumpers, although I had a riding accident this year over a jump. And so, I mean, I think it's time for me to move to the dressage world for many reasons.
Well, I'm sorry that you had an accident, but yay for dressage.
Yeah, you know, I'm grateful to have an instructor who really, really understands the importance of dressage for any discipline. Mm. And so we do a lot of, you know, flat work, which is, I know, different than dressage. But yeah, I think it's time. But I'm incredibly lucky that I've had horses in my life forever. I don't currently own any, which is nice because we're so busy with kids' activities. And like Jenny, none of my kids were interested in horses, which, you know, I don't mind because of, you know, the expense, the cost and everything. And
sure.
it really allows me to, have my sort of sanctuary at the barn. It's the place where I go to, you know, to get away from everything. And so, you know, I always talk about how horses are the best part of my life besides my family. And it's absolutely true. I'm really grateful to be in the horse community. Mm.
Well, it's so weird that neither one of you has a background in dressage, but you're both at the Dressage Foundation. How did that happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my background is in sales, event management, and nonprofit work professionally. So long story short, the Boomers, who were the founding family of the Dressage Foundation, were looking to retire. And they knew my mom, and she suggested that they speak to me about joining TDF as the administrative manager. So I was hired on in January of 2009 and became the executive director, I think, around 2014. And, you know, the connection with the Boomers was, the Boomers were looking for someone who had the horse bug and who were passionate about horses in general. And so I fit the bill, apparently. And, you know, I really feel like this position is so perfect for me. It combines a lifelong love and passion of horses, business skills, and just how much I appreciate and love working for a nonprofit organization. So it's been really fun, a wonderful ride, and kind of a career that I never would have imagined as just a little horse-loving girl growing up in Kansas and Nebraska. you know, I used to flip through the magazines and watch the Olympics on TV. And to know now that, like, I know these people, you know,
how
I know
cool.
these riders, and I get to help people that love horses as much as I do. It's just a wonderful, wonderful organization to be a part of and to work with such fabulous people.
And you get a fair amount of travel in too, don't you? Because of this?
Now the travel has really ramped up the past few years as far as where we're fortunate to be able to go. And we do attend, you know, like the Festival of Champions every year and the U.S. Dressage Finals. We go to the USDF convention. And really, unfortunately, we have to go to Florida a few times during the winter. Whoa, you know,
wow. Life is hard.
we don't complain.
And how about you, Sarah? How did you end up at TDF?
Yeah, so I've actually worked in the horse industry for quite a while. I started with a nonprofit that did horse mental health therapy. And the founder of that organization founded another organization to host horse shows in the Midwest. And they actually hosted the 2017 and 2023 World Cup here in Omaha. And, after the 17 World Cup, you know, I had young kids and, event planning is stressful. It is, some weeks it's 80 hours, 90 hours, no sleep. And a friend of mine who is a dressage rider here in Nebraska sent me a link to a job opening at TDF. And I had been aware of TDF. They had partnered with my former organization and were just really well respected in the area. And my friend sent me the link and said, you have to apply for this. And I think, Jenny, if I'm corrected, the job had been open for a while. And I sent it in, you know, just sort of like, oh gosh, I don't know anything about dressage. Let's see what happens. And met with Jenny and our board president, Beth Baumert, and the rest is history. And very much like Jenny said, it's been an incredible ride. Horses have done so much for me, and to be part of an organization that helps make our, you know, horse dreams come true has, it's really humbling. And I love to see how the community supports the community. And so it's really been, an amazing, ride, like I said, and a great group of people to work with. And I just so enjoy being a part of it. So. That's how I got here. I've been here for a little over five years and, still enjoy meeting new people. Traveling has been fantastic. I love to take photos and send to my friends of this is my office view for the day. And it's an arena with a beautiful horse in it. It's pretty nice.
I think probably a lot of our listeners don't know what the difference is between TDF and USDF. Can you clarify that for us?
Yes. So USDF was founded in 1973, and one of the founding fathers of USDF was Lowell Boomer from Nebraska. So as USDF was, you know, growing their membership and helping to grow the sport in its very infant stages in the country, it became apparent that financial support was needed to encourage broader participation and growth of dressage. So Lowell Boomer, same man, had the idea to start the Dressage Foundation as a separate organization in 1989. So the purpose of the foundation was not only supporting USDF and its membership with financial grants, but also with the flexibility to help others outside of the USDF umbrella. And you're right that people do confuse our organizations a lot. We do work collaboratively with USDF on a number of projects and initiatives and provide financial support for the organization's programs and its memberships. But we are a separate 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we have our own staff, obviously. We have our own board of directors, volunteers, and donors. So we have our own governance structure outside of USDF. That gives us a lot of flexibility with what we're able to do and who we're able to support. But always going back to the primary mission of wanting to support the growth of dressage as a whole with USDF.
Okay. Cool. Very cool. So we know that the Dressage Foundation gives money. But can you give us a little
And Stephanie really knows that.
Stephanie really knows that because I have been one of the very lucky people to receive a grant from the Dressage Foundation.
Exactly.
But can you tell us a little bit more about the different ways that that happens? Fill that out for us.
Sure. The mission of the Dressage Foundation is to cultivate and provide financial support for the advancement of dressage in the United States. It's a little bit of a mouthful. So simply put, we like to say we raise money, we manage it, and then we give it away. So we are a donor-driven organization, meaning that we don't have membership fees to support our grants and programs. All the funding that we're able to provide back to the dressage community is through the generosity of donors and returns on our investments.
Wow.
And we have over 40 grant funds, which is where the grants that we award come from. And they're available throughout the year. And I want to stress that they are available for all levels of dressage, all ages. There's grants for adult amateurs, youth, young riders, professionals, judges, technical delegates, military members, Western dressage riders, for group events. And it goes on and on.
Wow.
What you're saying is you do not have to be somebody to be somebody to the Dressage Foundation.
Absolutely. I think it's one of the things that I love the most is that we have riders that are intro level dressage riders all the way up to Olympians and everyone in between. And this year we gave grants to folks in Wyoming, in Montana, in South Dakota. So yes, you do see some of the bigger names that have gotten grants from TDF, but we really are from grassroots up. So it is something for everyone.
I just saw on Facebook a post from the TDF about the adult amateur grant that you just made. And there must have been, I mean, there was at least one from every region and some had several people within the region. That's very generous.
Yeah, we just announced yesterday, like you said, the gifted Memorial Fund grant for adult amateurs. And there were 11 adult amateurs that were given up to $1,500 for a concentrated amount of training with their horse. Carol Lavelle, who sort of helped found that fund, wanted to give adult amateurs permission to take a week to spend with their horse, to sort of have that experience that professionals have. As an adult amateur, you know, we often don't have time, kids, family, jobs. And so it's a really, really special grant. And I think it's pretty unique. And it's honestly just one of several grants we give to adult amateurs. So yesterday was a really, really fun day. It has been so wonderful to see all the comments on social media supporting these adult amateur riders and congratulating them. And so it's always fun when we get to announce grant recipients and see everybody celebrate along with us.
What's your favorite grant story?
That's a really tricky question. You know, with over 35 years of history of awarding grants, it's really difficult to choose favorites. You know, every applicant has different goals and dreams. And a lot of those, of course, are centered around training and education. Sometimes, but not always, their goals include competition. Some of our grants have helped riders, like Sarah said, like get to the Olympic stage. And some of our grants help riders move from training level to first level, all equally important and all very important to the growth of the sport in the country. A lot of times, though, what goes even further beyond just those education and training goals is the lasting impact that some of our grants have on people's lives and just going so much further and deeper than the training. And I think Sarah, she's got some really great examples of some of the recent grants that have been awarded that kind of fit that bill, that it's more than just, you know, getting a 70 on your dressage test.
Yeah. Tell us.
Yeah, we had a, this is pretty recent, and it'll actually be featured in our upcoming fall newsletter that is just about to be published here at TDF. But we do have grants available for groups to host events, all educational based. And earlier this year, we had a group fund application to the Michael Poulin Fund for Innovative Events and Programs. And a group called the Blind Equestrian Community reached out and applied. And it ended up being, a clinic for blind and visually impaired riders. It was, I think, one of the first, if not the first, clinic solely and specifically for blind and visually impaired riders. So that in itself was fantastic. And then it kept building. And to me, this grant and this award really kind of brings everything together. Part of the funding was to film the clinic. And so they are working on a documentary. They'll also use some of that footage to create educational videos for instructors who work with blind or visually impaired riders to give them a better idea of how to work and train folks that are blind or visually impaired. Within the clinic itself, we had grant recipients from our para dressage fund, from our visually impaired and blind rider fund.
Wow.
The instructor was a grant recipient as well. She had received a Team Tate leadership and mentorship fund. And so, you know, we had just this group of folks that came together, all and so many of them had connections to TDF. And it was really incredible to be a part of that. And I think it's going to have a really lasting impact for their community. And then on the individual side, like Jenny said, there are so many stories and impacts, again, that go deeper. We earlier this year as well, we gave a grant from the Veronica Holt Dressage Technical Delegate Fund. TDs are incredibly important to the sport. Mm-hmm. And we are thrilled to have a fund available for folks who want to receive the education to become a TD. And Jill, I'm probably going to mispronounce her name, Ikes from the Pennsylvania area, received a grant. Mm-hmm. And she is an emergency nurse who her job is to go on helicopters with medical issues. And she said that receiving this grant is going to allow her more time with her family. She had been helping and supporting her horse habit by taking on extra shifts as a helicopter nurse, which I can't even imagine the level of stress that has. And so she was just really grateful that she's like, I don't have to take those extra shifts for a while. I get to concentrate on my training and spend more time with my family. And so those are just a couple of the stories. And I mean, we could go on and on. but those a couple recently that it's sort of more about more. It's about more than just dressage. So many of our grants obviously are about training and, you know, moving up the levels, like Jenny said earlier, but it's really, really cool when it goes beyond that as well.
Can I share a personal moment because of what you guys have, you know, helped me, receiving the Major Anders Lindgren grant last year? I had been working with Kathy Connolly, but it almost gave me permission to put more time into my own riding. I frequently say I have my career and I have my business, and my business is teaching other people, but it gave me permission to focus on my career, and it helped me see the importance for both sides of having eyes on me, and it gave me a sense of commitment to continue doing this for myself once the grant was over. And I don't know that I would have gotten that. It has, you know, it's not only improved my riding, because how could you ride with Kathy and not? But it really gave me a sense of commitment to myself and my own goals. So that was just such an amazing reverberating gift.
Yeah. And I'd like to expand on that a little, because we do have quite a few grants for instructor trainers. And we have grants for new emerging professionals, mm-hmm. for young professionals. And then like the Major Lindgren Fund grant that you received for folks that have been training for a very long time. And you're exactly right. It gives folks who are very dedicated to the sport of dressage that opportunity to work on themselves. And we hear a lot that that's very hard for trainers and professionals to take the time to have the money to be able to do that. And then that trickles down. If you have students, if you're training horses, all of that education then goes back into your students and
absolutely.
So it's really one of those, one of the best parts that we see at TDF is that a grant doesn't just affect the grant awardee. It affects a lot of people, mm-hmm. That work with that trainer. And that's just one of the great things about receiving those grants.
Yes, with 100%. One of the things that I think is the coolest is your Century Club. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
And I am particularly interested.
We're counting down the days. We're counting down the months.
I know.
Well, the Century Club is also one of our favorite things about the Dressage Foundation. As you know, but maybe the listeners may not know, the Century Club was proposed to the Dressage Foundation in 1996 by Dr. Max Gayweiler, who was a noted instructor and judge at the time. And he thought of this idea as a way to encourage senior riders to stay active in the sport. And to join, the ages of the horse and rider have to add up to at least 100 years, and they have to ride a dressage test at a show, a virtual show, or some sort of other event. For example, we've had Century Club rides take place as like the lunchtime entertainment at a local clinic. So it doesn't have to be a recognized show. It can be schooling show or, you know, some of those other ways where you can ride a test to join. It really, truly is such a wonderful celebration of the seniors of our sport, both the horses and the riders. And it speaks to the health benefits, I think, that the dressage can provide and the longevity that is available to horses and riders to stay active and involved. When I started at the Dressage Foundation in 2009, we were literally welcoming a handful of Century Club members every year. I mean, back in those days, I knew all of them by name. I knew all their stories. Like, I could tell you off the top of my head where they were from, what their ages were, because there was like 7 a year. Easy, right? So things have changed since then, and we are so excited about the growth, and we love, love, love sharing the stories of our Century Club members.
And we love, love, love reading the stories as well.
And I just, when I think of the Century Club and the record growth that's happened over the last 5 years, wow. It's been incredible. The last 5 years, every year we've welcomed more and more members. And it just keeps growing. Right now, we are at right around 960 total members.
Wow.
From when
wow.
it started in 1996, which means we are very close to 1,000 members. We are really excited to hit that milestone, hopefully in early next year. And that's going to be very exciting. And, you know, I put together a couple of stats about the Century Club because it is so diverse that I wanted to, you know, share and give people a sense of how incredible it is. We have riders from every state but four. We don't have Century Club riders from Delaware, North and South Dakota, or West Virginia. So if there's any listeners out there who are in those states.
Maybe I need to move.
Yeah. You need to declare a different state.
Yeah, there we go.
Maybe wouldn't look at North or South Dakota until the spring. Yeah, I would maybe skip the winter, but beautiful states. Intro level is our most popular level. So there's no, you know, requirements on what level you have to ride with your horse. It's really about having fun and then honoring your partnership. We have had in the history of the Century Club 7 Grand Prix rides. So that's pretty amazing in itself. And then of course, everything in between, including Western dressage, cowboy dressage. We have a lot of eventers. We've had carriage. One person this year did her Century Club ride for dressage and is doing her Century Drive. Which is really fantastic. I love that there is such a variety of horse breeds that do this. You know, you have your standard Western or your standard dressage breeds, your warm blood, your thoroughbreds, but there are quarter horses, paints, Tennessee Walkers, Nakota. We had a Nakota horse, a Spanish Mustang. And so it really shows the breadth of dressage, and that dressage can be for every horse and every rider. Our riders are the same as the horses, of really diverse background. We've had riders that have been riding their whole life. One of my favorite stories is from a rider in Texas who said she grew up with her dad as a cattle rancher, and he'd sit her on the saddle, in the Western saddle, as a baby and a toddler, and they'd go check fence. And then we have riders that started later in life. Last year, we had a Century Club rider whose husband bought her riding lessons for her 60th birthday, and she had some health issues, and they thought riding might be good exercise and in a positive environment. Well, she got hooked, of course. So horse shows, horses later. I sometimes wonder what the husband might think now.
Oops.
Yeah, but it's really great. The riders, the Century Club riders themselves, you know, doctors, lawyers, teachers, professional trainers, judges, historians. We have somebody who was on Broadway. Lots of members of the military. So it's really one of those clubs that is just, and programs that is just fantastic, because it's welcome. We welcome everyone who loves dressage and wants to celebrate their partnership with their horse.
Well, I've been very honored to have judged four of them. And it is so wonderful to see. I mean, 100 is a lot. You know, 100 is a lot. Mm-hmm. And the partnership and the relationship and talking to the riders, you know, and listening to them talk about their love for their horse and, you know, how long they've been together and what they've done. And it's just so special. And I'm going to do it May of 2030, assuming that my horse and I both stay sound. That's my goal. And I love that TDF is so flexible about the way in which you can ride your test, that it doesn't have to be a licensed show, that it doesn't have to be something formal. So for people who don't have the ability to go away from home, but they have an arena and they can ride the test, they can do it virtually. Or what I'm planning to do is, I have friends who are judges who are going to come and judge at my house, you know? So, you know, and then we're going to have a big party, but yes. You know, it's just such a wonderful program for reminding people that this is one of the few sports that you can do old, and that just because you're old or your horse is old doesn't mean that you can't still be out there doing it and doing it well. You know, I think this was the first thing that I learned about TDF was the Century Club, and I have just been thrilled with it ever since. So thank you.
Our oldest rider was 95 years old.
Stop.
And I, I think we all have those days where, you know, it's cold or it's rainy and we don't want to go to the barn, or, you know, we'd rather do something than go ride. And when we get these stories about these Century Club riders, it is so inspiring. If a 95-year-old can get out there and ride and train and do this, then we have no excuse.
No excuses. None. Yes.
I feel that way about our para riders too. Like, okay, if they can do this with one hand or no legs, I think I can get out to the barn today.
Yeah.
And that's amazing.
A lot of them do talk about how having the goal of a century ride has kept them and their horses in shape, has really has been impactful for their own health, both mentally and physically. So it's just one of those programs that is just, I think, really special and really unique. And we are, I think Jenny and I and our board and our whole team, we're really humbled to be a small part of these folks' journeys.
That's amazing.
And you mentioned that the rides can happen anywhere. You know, we made that decision quite a while ago because we want horse welfare to be first and foremost, right? We don't want to put horses into a situation when they're 30 and they're off property and they're nervous and scared and don't know what's going on. Like, why did you think that way? So we want people to be able to join, as you mentioned, virtually or at holding an event at their home. Safety first and foremost. And again, even riding any level, we want the horse and rider to be as both comfortable and both able to perform at the level that is appropriate for them. So we just, love that it's open to such a wide range of people in so many different situations.
Well, the ones that I've judged.
Go ahead, Seth.
No, well, I was going to say the ones that I've judged were all at either intro training or first level, which I thought was really pretty cool.
Last year, different levels presented. Jean Brinkman did hers, and she did a pre-St. George test. I thought that was pretty awesome.
Yeah. I can't imagine being strong enough and fit enough as a true senior with a true senior horse doing a Grand Prix. That to me is just absolutely mind-boggling. Those people are, you know, they're rock stars.
Yeah. Well, don't you remember some years, I don't know if it was two or three Olympics ago, there was a gentleman from Japan that rode on the Japanese team, and he was like 70. I was just blown away.
Well, Sarah mentioned that 95-year-old rider. And you talk about strength and fitness. We were told that she was still cleaning her own stalls, tacking up her horse, grooming her horse. Like, she was putting in the work, and she was 95 and very healthy and able to do all of this. So it's a goal to aspire to for sure.
And probably doing all of that is what kept her so fit.
Exactly. Yep. We think we have to stay alive because nobody's going to take care of my horse as well as I will. So
nobody will clean the stall the way I do.
That's right. So ladies, if somebody wanted to apply for a grant, how would they start? Where would they go? And how would they know what grant would be appropriate for them?
That's a great question. Because we have so many different grants, it can sometimes seem complicated and overwhelming. But our website, which is www.dressagefoundation.org, which is O-R-G, has all of our grants listed. They're listed two ways, either by date by their application due date, or by categories. So if you're an adult amateur, you can click on our tab for adult amateurs and see all the grants that are available for you. I also really recommend following us on social media. We do send out notifications and reminders for grant deadlines and our e-news, which goes out every month. We do not spam you. Also has a list of all of our application dates. One thing that I think is really nice about our application dates is for our individual grants, the deadlines don't change. They're the same year after year. So if you missed a deadline or something, mark your calendar for next year. And the thing I also want to stress is that we are always available to help. If there's any questions, we can help point you in the right direction. If you have, if you tell us your criteria or what your goals are, feel free to give us a call or shoot us an email, and we can help answer those questions for you.
Yes, you were very helpful because you helped me restructure something. I think the budgeting about mine it more palatable for the people looking at it. And that was huge. That was huge.
Yeah. We do need a certain amount of information, including a budget for all of our grants, but we do try to every year we go through and we look to see how we can simplify things. Mm-hmm. And, actually, thanks to some amazing donors, per usual, we are implementing a new grant software, a grant management software program. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't sound very exciting, but it will help us be more efficient in the office. Mm-hmm. But it, I think, will be easier for applicants. They can save their applications now. They can reapply a lot easier. So we're always looking for ways to make it less intimidating and easier for everyone to apply.
Well, I'm sitting here looking at the website right now, and it's very user friendly and it's very self-explanatory.
And okay. We'll make sure that we have all of the links attached to this podcast so that people can click from here to get to you both on the website and on your social media.
Awesome. Thank you.
So yeah, this is a great time of year to connect with us on social media because we are going to be announcing several new grant funds for 2026. So just a little sneak peek, there will be new grants for those attending part two of the L Education program, which we have just recently announced. We are going to have some new youth grants. We are going to have some new funding available to help trainers of young horses. We will have some new funding available for those who operate or own riding schools and lesson programs. So there is so much exciting, really great things in the works right now. So make sure you get connected because we don't want you to miss out on any of the fun news coming up.
That's amazing. That's super. One other aspect that isn't discussed as much, not just how can you give us money, but if someone wanted to donate or become part of the giving program through the Dressage Foundation, how would they go about that? What kind of things would be interesting to you?
So we are so immensely grateful for all the people who want to help others reach their dressage goals who donate to the Dressage Foundation. It's obviously an individual sport. It's you and your horse kind of out there competing against the world. But the fact that there's so many people every year who want to come together and build the community with each other by helping others is really, really special to us. The donations come in all sizes. We have small donations, medium, large, and each and every dollar truly does make an impact. And I know every nonprofit says that, but it really, really is true. And of course, as we're entering the giving season, we definitely want to encourage people to think about helping the dressage community through a donation to the Dressage Foundation. Ways to do that include by donating by check or credit card on our website. We have a really great community of monthly donors who, you know, donate $10 a month, $5 a month, $25 a month. Stephanie, thank you. And that all adds up to a really big amount every year. When you've got so many people donating a small amount, it adds up very quickly. There's folks who donate stock and get some really nice tax benefits by doing that. And another way to get great tax benefits is if you are of the age where you're required to take a distribution from your IRA, you can donate to a qualified charity like the Dressage Foundation through a qualified charitable distribution, and then you might not have to pay taxes on some of that. So another thing that we do like to talk about when people are thinking of their future and doing some long-term planning and creating their wills, we always invite people to consider leaving a gift to the Dressage Foundation or other charities that are close to their heart in their will. it's a wonderful way to help the future of our sport without having to take anything out of your pocket right now. So, all that information is available on our website. And, you know, one thing that maybe I'd like to mention, because we talked about our relationship with USDF, is we always have a lot of different fundraising initiatives taking place. And one that we're focused on right now is for the new USDF Education Program Support Fund. Because, you know, we are separate organizations, but working closely together. And we know that every year, USDF's programs reach tens of thousands of dressage enthusiasts, from people just beginning their journey as a youth, all the way up to the professionals continuing their education as instructors and judges. And with the increasing costs that we are all very aware of, with everything in our lives right now, the cost to organize those programs continues to rise. So financial support is needed to ensure that USDF's wonderful education programs can continue to be offered in a real far-reaching but affordable way. So working together, we are establishing this new grant fund to provide some support to USDF and their educational programs now and into the future. When we're at the USDF convention here in a couple weeks, we are going to be announcing some fun fundraising initiatives to support that USDF fund. But again, we have lots of areas that could use some extra dollars, whether you want to support the Century Club and help us give every new team a beautiful ribbon and an engraved photo frame, or if you want to help the youth of our sport, or just you would like to help us keep the lights on and, you know, just doing the pop do and just the general donation. Those are always welcome as well. And all that information and more is always available on our website. Or just like if you were applying for a grant, if you have questions about making a donation, feel free to call or email, and we are happy to help.
Wonderful. Aviva, did we leave yes, ma'am. Any topic uncovered with these ladies? I feel like they were very thorough.
They were way more organized than we are.
We have learned from you dressage people how to be organized on time.
Well, you know, so we're organized, but we're also flexible. But we're also very flexible, we dressage people. So, you know, Stephanie and I just kind of wing it. You guys were beautifully prepared, and we appreciate it. And you're wonderful representatives of the TDF. And I can't tell, the community really does appreciate all of the things that you do. I've known quite a few people who have received grants over the years, and you know, you make a difference, and you know, you should hear that. You do make a difference, and we appreciate you.
We do. Yes. We appreciate that tremendously.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. It is good to hear. And we'll be sure to pass that along to our donors, because they're the ones that really make it all possible. We are just the third party helping make the connections between the people who want to help others and those who need the help. So it's an honor.
Well, ladies, thank you for your time. We hope that you, do you have anything exciting going on this weekend? Are you traveling anywhere for a TDF function, or do you get to be home this weekend?
Well, Lendon Gray, she's our board chair. She's actually coming to Lincoln to do one of her Dressage for Kids clinics for the first time ever in Nebraska. So I'm going to take some time and go watch Lendon teach some of our really wonderful youth that are in the area. So that'll be fun.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. Terrific.
Can I just say as an aside that at one point my horse was donated to Dressage for Kids? Nice. Isn't that cool?
That's an amazing program.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, for anybody who's listening, please send money to the TDF, because you never know where that money is going to go. And I just, as I said, I just went on the website and I'm going to send a check. So thank you.
Thank you, Aviva. That's super generous.
Thank you.